Good morning. This is Wendy Bauer reading to you today on July 6th, 2015 from the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll begin this morning with an article titled "The Alert Siren Changes in Decatur." The article begins with a picture of ominous clouds over a highway, the caption reading, "A storm moves over US 20 on Thursday, April 9th, 2015, in Belvidere, Illinois. At least one large tornado touched down Thursday night in central Illinois, causing significant damage." And from Decatur, "Residents will hear a slightly different alarm during regular tornado siren tests Tuesday, July 7th. The city recently replaced the radio controls for its siren system," Public Works Director Rick Marley said. "In addition to the 3-minute tone that signals a tornado warning, the sirens are capable of an attack warning, a sound that fluctuates in volume. Following the usual tornado siren test at 10 a.m., the city will sound the attack warning for 30 seconds to a minute to ensure it works. The use of the attack warning in an emergency would be determined by the Federal Emergency Management Agency," Marley said. Also from Decatur, article written by Allison Petty, Herald and Review staff writer, "Council to hear library property options." The Decatur City Council will weigh in tonight on the long brewing arrangement for the Decatur Public Library and Macon County offices to share space. Governing bodies for the library, County and Decatur Public Building Commission, already have approved the plan, under which the Building Commission would purchase the library building at 130 North Franklin Street. It has been discussed publicly by those bodies since November, including at public forums held in December. City Manager Tim Gleason said in May that the council would need to approve the proposal, a factor that had previously been unclear. Speaking Friday, he said the city's legal counsel determined recently that the council also has the first right to purchase the library building under state law. Gleason said he would present that information, as well as other facts about the deal, to the council in a study session tonight. He does not plan to recommend a particular course of action. "It would be premature to bring a resolution in front of them to approve or not approve the considerations on the table at the time. I need to let them know that they have the right and see what direction they give me," he said. Under the current plan, the Building Commission would purchase the library building for $3.1 million. Instead of paying the library a lump sum, the Commission would essentially pay for the building by giving the library a break on its rent, keeping the rate $615,000 annually for 20 years. County offices would move into unused space on the library's second floor and in its annex building. The Macon County Office Building at 141 South Main Street would be sold to 101 Main Place LLC, with the intended purpose to redevelop the building for residential use. The Illinois Local Library Act gives library boards the power to sell property deemed no longer necessary for library purposes, and to lease property that is not immediately useful, but for which there might be future plans. However, it says, the corporate authorities shall have the first right to purchase or lease. In addition, there are several other facts that Gleason has said he wants to make sure council members understand. The library building is recorded on city financial statements as a city asset valued at $4.1 million. However, the library's board of trustees holds the deed. Also, the city still owes about $735,000 in principal of $5.2 million general obligation bonds that were issued in 1998 and refinanced in 2010. The money was used to renovate the library facility. To pay off the debt, the city is scheduled to pay $255,000 this year, $245,000 next year, and $235,000 in 2017. Long term for the city of Decatur, there are two things that I'm not sure have been considered, Gleason said. That is, what are the future operational needs for the city of Decatur? And then two, with the heavy public-private investment in the downtown area, what is that building worth down the road? The Council also will consider on its consent agenda the addition of 3 new members to the Library Board, replacing those whose terms have expired. They include the City's Director of Financial Management, Greg Ziantara, as well as Michael Sexton and Aaron Largent. The Library Board didn't previously include a representative from City staff. Mayor Mike McElroy appoints Library Board members with the consent of Council. The next article is entitled Smash Camp Closes with a Bonus. This is an article written by Valerie Wells, a staff writer with the Herald and Review. Begins with a picture of several young people dancing. Caption is from left, Kyla Jones, Alexia Templar, Mariah Shores, Honor Holmes, and Anaya Smith react to Caleb Patton during an impromptu Girls vs. Boys dance-off after the Smash Camp closing ceremony Thursday in the Richards Treat University Center at Millikan University. 4 weeks can go by before you know it, and the counselors and kids involved in Smash Camp at Millikan University had their closing ceremonies Thursday. Now you have the talent, skills, and creativity, said Counselor Kami Midor, who began the camp in June, by telling the students that going into business when she was their age amounted to starting a lemonade stand with supplies nicked from her family's kitchen. Your business does not have to stop here. The world is at your fingertips, she said. The camp, a cooperative venture between the Decatur School District and Millikan, with donations and assistance from area businesses, had the theme of valuing the undervalued. The students' task was to create products from cast-offs and sell them in an online auction that ended Wednesday. Their products included chairs made from old tires, a desk made from a dilapidated organ, a chaise lounge on wheels made from pallets, coasters made from discarded CDs, wall art made from paper towel and toilet paper tubes, and candles made from broken crayons. The auction made $350 after the auction site's 5% cut, and each camper received a $10 gift card. The idea from the beginning, Counselor Jenny Mullins said, was for everyone to learn and profit as a group, so the money raised was divided evenly, regardless of the final selling price of any one of the group's products. And when Julie Shields, who teaches entrepreneurship at Millikan, asked the students what they'd learned and whether they felt like entrepreneurs, the students seemed unsure of that. Most of it was set up for us, Tori White said. We didn't do everything ourselves. Also, we haven't made any money yet. At Millikan, Shields said she looks for clues that her students have learned. All lessons are not found in books and curriculum. We undervalue ourselves, she said. Look inside and see the value and potential in yourselves. Figure out how to draw the value out of yourself. Next article from Decatur, titled Sharing Pot with Child Nets Charges. A Decatur man was arrested and jailed Friday afternoon on charges of endangering the health of a child because he allegedly allowed an 11-year-old boy to smoke cannabis. The child's mother said her son came home acting strangely and unable to speak properly. He told her that someone had given him weed. The mother returned with the boy to the 900 block of West Center Street, and the child pointed out a 20-year-old male suspect. According to written reports, the suspect allegedly said he had allowed the boy to inhale synthetic cannabis and not the actual drug. Also from the crime and court section of the local page, titled Multiple Shots Fired. From Decatur, police say multiple shots were fired on a Decatur street Friday night, but nobody was hurt. Residents in the 800 block of South Stone Street reported hearing 6 shots at 11:30 p.m., and police found evidence of 3 bullet holes in 2 cars and a house. Witness reports said a gunman on foot fired the rounds before leaving in a vehicle. And an article written by Tony Reed, a Herald and Review staff writer from Macon, titled Homeowners Awaken by Barefoot DUI Suspect. A barefoot driver who walked almost 2 miles to get help early Sunday was booked on driving under the influence of alcohol and drug-related charges after he was picked up by sheriff's deputies. A resident living west of Macon near the intersection of Hibbard and Blue Mound Roads had called police after the 24-year-old driver, who lives in Decatur, hammered on his door around 5:50 a.m. to announce he had crashed his sport utility vehicle into a ditch. He had become stuck in the ditch, and he told the homeowner what his name was, and then he began walking, said Lieutenant Jamie Belcher with the Macon County Sheriff's Office. The homeowner said the driver's speech was slurred, and he seemed kind of lethargic. The homeowner called us. Deputies found the driver, his clothes wet and muddy, sometime later hammering on another door in the 400 block of East Cole Street in Macon, claiming it was the home of his brother. Belcher said deputies also noticed his slurred speech and allegedly could smell the odor of alcohol coming from him. Belcher said he failed a field sobriety test, and testing revealed a blood alcohol level of 0.161. The legal limit is 0.08. The driver was booked into the Macon County Jail on charges of DUI, failure to use due care while driving, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of a controlled substance, which was not identified in police reports. He was also charged with driving while license suspended, and Belcher said the DUI charge becomes a felony because the driver allegedly did not have a valid driver's license when he was caught. Next article, titled Cash Makes Good on Fair Deal, from Arthur. When the man in black finally agreed to show up at the place he'd never been, it was July 19th, 1969, in the Amish town of Arthur. And there he was, singing superstar Johnny Cash and his wife, June Carter, along with the Carter family and Carl Perkins and the Tennessee Three, performing 2 one-hour shows in the grandstand of the Moultrie Douglas County Fair. The fair was used to hooking pretty big stars in those far-off days, before TV deals and mega salaries put everyone out of reach. Tammy Wynette and George Jones had played the grandstand earlier in the week. But this was still the Johnny Cash, one of the most important singer-songwriters of all time. Having him show up back then feels today like we just heard Mick Jagger announce the Rolling Stones will open their next North American tour in Dalton City. With the 2015 Douglas Moultrie County Fair going on this week, headliners the Marshall Tucker Band play the grandstand Saturday, July 11th, today's fair organizers thought it was high time to spotlight the event's glorious past. And Bill Singer, the current fair board vice president, says cash rates as the biggest draw in the fair's 82-year history, although memories of the late star have faded with the passing years. His coming here was a legend, but it was legend with a lot of people my parents' age, explains Singer, 57. These days, there are people on today's fair board who didn't know about any of this. And thereby hangs a storyline worthy of a country song. It turns out Cash was originally booked for the princely sum of $4,000 to play the fair on July 22, 1967, but stood the event up. Why is a matter for some speculation. Singer thinks Cash might have changed his mind as a full voice, as a voice full of Folsom Prison blues was launched on a career trajectory that no longer needed to play small venues. Mark Jones, a budding young photographer of 18 at the time who snapped some stunning pictures of Cash, has his own theories. Cash, he pointed out, had frequent run-ins with the law and fell into a ring of fire with his additions to amphetamines and prescription pills. Jones thinks he might have been under arrest at the time of the Arthur show, so was unable to play the gig. Whatever the excuse, the Moultrie Douglas County Fair Board was ready to say, "I walk the line," in defense of their breached contract. They sued the guy who sang A Boy Named Sue for damages they calculated at $9,750 plus costs. Recently, with the help of retired Douglas County Judge Mike Carroll, a treasure trove of documentation about the lawsuit has been unearthed from the bowels of the Douglas County Courthouse. The judge called and said he had found the file and somebody had wrote on it, "Johnny is dead, do not shred," said Singer, who runs the Singer Insurance Agency in Arthur. Obviously, someone thought it might be of some value and significance. And it's fun reading. There is a 1968 letter in there on paper emblazoned with almost 2-inch high Johnny Cash Incorporated notepaper from Cash's manager, Saul Holof, who disputes everything from the way the summons against the Star was served to the nature of the complaint itself. Holof points out, without being specific as to why, that his client was totally incapacitated on the day that he was to appear at the Moultrie Douglas Fair. In the end, a happy compromise was reached when the performer agreed to bring the Johnny Cash Show to town in that July of 1969 for the original $4,000 fee. And perform he did, belting out his great songs to an audience in the thousands as the crowd exploded outside the confines of the fairgrounds and people climbed trees and buildings just to get a peek. Jones, a professional photographer who runs the Tin Type Studio in Arthur, was introduced to Cash and, 35mm camera in hand, got ushered into his dressing room before the Arthur show. He would later photograph the show itself, but one image he snapped of a brooding Cash sitting on a dressing room couch with his face half in shadow catches the essential essence of a powerful intellect with something to sing about. Jones said the man behind the voice couldn't have been more pleasant and was willing to let a keen young photographer give it his best shot. I think he was astute enough to realize that this kid might know what he's doing, and these images might come out, recalls Jones. So it was like he thought, I'll give him one moment, and if he's quick enough, he will get it. I look at that dressing room picture now, and I guess I was quick enough. Discussions are underway about what to do with the Cash archive of legal documents, contracts, letters, and photographs, and the intention is to see it on permanent display somewhere in town, a tourist attraction to rival cute Amish buggies and delicious Amish cooking. As for the Fair Board of 1969, they counted their good fortune $1 piece at a time and discovered the man in black had left them very much in the black. Singer still lives in the family home right across from the fairgrounds and remembers the nervous fair organizers hauling the audience receipts clear of the grandstand because they were worried about getting robbed. They brought it all over to our house and counted it on the kitchen table, recalls Singer, and that whole table was just covered in cash. And an article written by Teresa Churchill titled Restaurant Renaissance, Downtown Dining Options Mushroom, begins with a picture of a young woman serving up soft drinks with a caption, Selena King prepares a lunch order at the Lincoln Square Lounge in downtown Decatur. From Decatur. In 1983, the year Billy Joel released his hit single Uptown Girl and cast himself as a downtown man unwilling to be overlooked, downtown Decatur was in decline. Many corporate restaurants popped up in the 1970s and 80s, and people started to go to those, Andrew Schilligris said. Now I feel people want to connect with Decatur and go where they know people care and want you to come back. Schilligris is betting on that as part as the owner of the newly refurbished Lincoln Square Lounge, one of downtown's oldest eateries, and also owner of the building that houses Anna Thai, which opened in June in the spot he renovated 3 years ago for another Thai restaurateur who didn't stay. The addition will bring the number of restaurants in downtown Decatur to 18, with nearly half of them open 5 years or less. For the Renaissance, many owners credit streetscape improvements that began in 2011 and will conclude this summer with the Franklin Street Corridor. In addition to creating more apartments that feed the return to downtown, Schilligris has not only redone the main bar area and dining room of the Lincoln, he just added an adjoining banquet overflow room in the space Capital Comics used to lease at 127 North Main Street. The gyro plate and flaming cheese are enduring menu favorites, he said. One block over, A full 6 dining choices occupy the east side of Merchant Street, but the oldest is Robbie's Grill, focusing on salmon and other healthy options. Owner Rodney Powell said each place fills a niche. Business has never been better, and that he, like most others downtown, appreciate the freedom they and their employees have to be with their families on Sundays. Those that are open on Sunday include the Lincoln, Possibilities Italian Grill, and the Downtown Cafe. Co-owner John Ninneman said the cafe serves breakfast and lunch 7 days a week, but Saturday is best and Sunday's best. There must be 10 or 12 churches within 4 or 5 blocks of here and plenty of places to park, he said. We serve traditional American food and people like it. Ninneman and his wife Barbara are looking for a buyer who will keep the Downtown Cafe going. Open since 2006, Doherty's Pub and Pins has become such a popular place for groups to gather that John, Bob, and Jeff Hawkins took out the last 6 bowling lanes last year to create a second banquet room. John Hawkins said customers think the roasted red pepper smoked Gouda soup is the bomb, and that downtown has changed drastically since he became the owner of Robbie's 20 years ago. I think there were only 3 of us down here back then, he said. Now the park looks nice, the lighting's good, and you can walk from one place to another, order an appetizer at one, have dinner at another, and eat dessert somewhere else if you want. Paco Greenwell said opening Paco's Saul Bistro in 2010, shortly before Archer Daniels Midland Company moved 350 employees downtown and the city began streetscape improvements, got his business off to a good start, but that his chicken meatloaf and southwestern egg rolls are what keep people coming back. He said the restaurant is doing surprisingly well after adding lunch on Saturdays in exchange for giving employees 2 consecutive days off by closing Monday as well as Sunday. As for what would make downtown even better, Brent Sloan of Sloan's Calzones would like to see stores stay open later in the day. Debbie Hill of St. Nicholas Grill wants some dancing, and John Redden of Taproot has been hankering for a coffee shop. Then Dilly's Bakery opened last month at 231 North Main Street, serving gourmet coffee in addition to satisfying a person's sweet tooth in almost every possible way. There's something to be said for taking a stroll, getting a coffee, and going back to work, Redden said. I love it that people are coming downtown instead of driving north. We are investing in ourselves again. Warapat Addy Tangbunagarakit and his wife Ratana Anna Darawankul, owners of Mai Tai in Champaign and Siam Terrace in Urbana, said they are looking forward to being part of the mix of restaurants in downtown Decatur with Anna Tai. We have good food and great service served with a smile, he said. And now the Lake Decatur Dredge Report. The Lake Decatur dredging project has moved into the Big Creek area, where it will remain for the rest of this year and into next year. Crews for contractor Great Lakes Dredge and Dock recently finished their work in Basin 1, the first phase of the project. Jerry Stevens, Engineering Services Coordinator for the city's Water Management Department, has reported. They removed 254,519 cubic yards of sediment from the lake in June, bringing the total to 794,702 cubic yards this year, he said. 1 cubic yard is equal to about 200 gallons of material. The total project is expected to increase the lake's capacity by about 30%, officials have said. Since work began in late October, crews have now removed over 1,100,000 cubic yards of material. That means they're about a tenth of the way done, Stevens said, as the total goal of the project is to remove 10.8 million cubic yards. Residents who live in the Big Creek area might hear some engine noise, but because the dredge is not diesel-powered, Stevens said the sound would be minimal. Crews also occasionally blow a horn to signal to one another, he said. While the dredging work sails ahead without complications, wet weather has delayed earthwork on the sediment storage basin near Oakley. The project calls for raising the berms or barriers around a 523-acre basin by 10 feet. Stevens said subcontractor Terra Contracting Services lost 23 days in June because of rain, leaving only 7 working days. There are 32 employees working for Great Lakes, 19 of whom live in Macon or adjacent counties. Terra has 22 employees, 20 of whom come from the same local area, Stevens said. In an article written by Ryan Voiles, a Herald and Review staff writer, titled Citizens Aiding Law Enforcement, Lauded by State's Attorney. From Decatur, Robert Schaefer did not want to get involved when he came across a single vehicle accident. But when he noticed the driver was obviously impaired and attempting to drive away from the scene, Schaefer knew he needed to do something to prevent the driver from hurting anyone. The idea just kind of popped in my head. I went up and talked him into letting me hit the gas while he tried to push the truck, Schaefer said. I then held onto the keys until the sheriff's deputies showed up. The driver, who had 3 prior convictions for driving under the influence and had a blood alcohol level content 3 times the legal limit at the time of the accident, and was later sentenced to prison for aggravated DUI. That quick thinking was among the reasons Schaefer was joined by others Wednesday at the Decatur Civic Center as he and 11 others received an Exemplary Citizen Award. The awards arose from a desire by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott to reward those who helped to make the community safer by assisting law enforcement. These are the people who are a reason why the crime rates in Macon County are going down and why our numbers are lower than similar counties in Illinois, Scott said, adding his office works with police to keep database of individuals who played crucial roles helping to keep the community safe. For Terry Wallace, assisting officers in a case was just doing what her mother taught her to do. Wallace, who was the victim of an armed robbery at her store, was able to provide detailed information to police that led to a quick arrest. She later took the stand at a jury trial of an accomplice, which led to a conviction of both offenders on armed robbery. She said she wanted to help make the community safer, like when she was a child. Being raised in the 60s and 70s, it was more of a small community attitude than what my daughter would face, Wallace said. I'm hoping we can get back to those values so it will be safer for my children and my grandchildren in this city. The other recognized recipients included Crystal Johnson, Charles and Ashley Durbin, Donald Hill, Marshall J. Edwards, Tyler Procarioni, and Cody Miller, Tegan Halkitis, James Killings, the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, and Scott said after the presentation that the awards remain his favorite day of the year and that it remains important to recognize those who help make the county a safer place. If no one does anything or says anything or cooperates, then things will get worse. Citizens are only recognized after the case they assist with goes to trial. And we will now take a break. I have been reading from the Decatur Herald and Review, today, July 6th, 2015. Reading will continue after a short break. Thank you.